Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come, and you shall know peace and joy. In the quietness of this place, surrounded by the all-pervading presence of the Holy, my heart whispers, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve, that in good times or in tempests, I may not forget that to which my life is committed. Keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve.
We have two short readings today. The first is from William Butler Yeats, part of the poem, The Second Coming. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity.
Our second reading comes from a box of cards. Flux, a perfectly simple card game for 2 to 6 players. Simple, Flux has but one rule. Draw one card and play one card. What cards could you play? Well, you could play time, or you could play war, or perhaps love. I think I'll play chocolate. Chocolate is a good thing to have. What's this? You have played the card, play two. Well then, play a second card. Don't you know the rule of Flux? It is this, draw one card and play two cards. Well, that's what it is now. Perfectly simple. The goal of the game, oh, I'm terribly sorry, we haven't played a goal card yet. No one, so enter the world of Looney Lab Games. That's a fitting name, isn't it? Good morning, my name's Karina Whitaker Lewis.
And I'm Dale Whitaker Lewis, and we've been here at First GU for almost 20 years.
And we have two daughters who delight and challenge us every day. Audrey, who you just heard reading the children's story, she's 13, and Bridget's here as well, she's 10. And we hope we live up to Janet's expectations today. We're very honored. She asked us to speak, and we're also a bit daunted. Please forgive our need to read a lot of what we're going to have to say to you today. We've reflected much over the years on this church, this congregation, this religion called Unitarian Universalism. Having been raised without a religious tradition, this church is the only one I've ever known, so it's all new to me. And we found this church in 1991 because we wanted someone to marry us, but just leaving it at that somehow felt wrong. We needed to make a connection here, and we have. We've made some really good friends, and we've left services feeling recharged for the week ahead.
I grew up attending an Irish Catholic church in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Despite the loving and valiant efforts of my parents, I didn't connect strongly with that faith and the rituals of my parents, and I came to hate being forced to attend. Millions of people have gained purpose and direction from that religion, but I came away as a teen bitter, and except for my love of a good hymn, feeling like I'd escaped something unpleasant. When we started coming here in 91, I overcame my childhood resentment of religion by striking myself a bargain. I'd be okay attending church if A, I didn't have to dress up, and B, if I didn't have to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. I could miss a week or two.
And for a while, that was all we needed. Inspiring sermons, a casual dress code, and no truancy policy. But our family's participation in the life of this church has really waxed and waned and waxed over the last 18 years. There were some years where we came to service maybe once a month. The old bargain didn't make our church life very meaningful by itself. But seeing that you all accepted our approach made this a safe spiritual home for us. In the vocabulary of logic, this was a necessary condition for our growth, but it wasn't a sufficient one.
We sometimes fell back on that old basic bargain, but over time, both our involvement and our unconscious expectations grew. Over the years, we've taught in summer camps, chaired the Social Action Committee, helped form an Amnesty International group, served on the Board of Trustees, and worked on the church's computer network. My resentment of religion was gone, and we enjoyed most of our church activities. Without thinking about it, though, our expectations grew for a cleaner RE wing, for support of our personal causes, for a well-oiled volunteer process, and the like. So our minimum requirements for church life expanded, but I can't say that we ever spelled out the new bargains that we'd made clearly, even to ourselves. At the same time, we often didn't know what the church and its members expected of us, and so we weren't always very engaged.
Looking back, the inconsistency of our attendance seems strange to me. I guess there were reasons why we didn't come much some years. Newborns, new houses, new jobs. So while I think an expressed tolerance and acceptance drew us to this place, the absence of a request for a commitment kept us from making one. Asking for a commitment would have meant this church would have to know itself and be able to describe that to us, and then be able to tell us what our role as church members would be. Because to ask us to figure all that out was just way too much work. I mean, that is way too many choices. Does that mean we were lazy? Does that mean we were not good UU material? I mean, I think it's a lot to ask someone to find all that out. But, you know, this is all about everyone finding their own truths, right? But I think it's the kind of work that you join a church to do with other people, developing relationships and, dare I say, developing some rules. I'm one of those who works better with constraints than without constraints. And I wonder if that doesn't have something to do with it. I mentioned this to Natalie Freeberg, in the office the other day, and she said, oh, yeah, I've seen the most creative costumes at the Black and White Ball in San Francisco, where, you know, it has to be only black or white, but you get to be very imaginative in that framework. So multiple choices sometimes tend to stymie me, and I don't think I'm alone in this. In Dr. Barry Schwartz, in his book, The Paradox of Choice, Why More is Less, argues that too many choices can erode our psychological well-being. He cites a study where shoppers will buy more jam if they're offered less varieties of it. He argues that after thousands of years of working towards the simplification of us trying to provide for the necessities we need in our lives, the trend is kind of reversing back to a more foraging type behavior where we are forced to sift through multiple choices and more in every aspect of our lives. I know that after shopping exclusively in Little Leedsville for a while, going into an HEB can feel like climbing Mount Everest.
So let's fast forward to February of 2006 in our church lives, where our minister delivered the only sermon we've ever walked out of about the responsibility for the 9/11 attack. The experience helped reveal hidden assumptions and expectations we had. And understanding those new expectations matters more to us now than what was said or how it made us feel. We had made new bargains and had new necessary conditions on our church life. We had strong expectations that weren't being met about what other church members believed or would accept. I've been an alcoholic in recovery for nearly my whole adult life. I spent my 20th birthday in rehab. The lessons of sobriety have shaped my life, including church. I've been taught that when I have resentments, it helps to look relentlessly at my own part in the matter. This serves two main purposes. First, to take the focus off the offender, since there's no way I'm ever going to change them. Second, it helps me to see where, to quote recovery literature, I've made decisions based on self, which later put me in a position to be hurt.
After 2006 and through the dismissal to this year, we have thought a lot about our role in the hardship we now face together. In the example of the 9/11 sermon, Dale and I had found we had developed unspoken assumptions about how others must support us and about the type of sanctuary you were required to maintain for us while we were here. We had built the walls of our sanctuary well with inside the walls of this church, and we kind of just left out the parts that we weren't happy with. So we were not really seeing this sanctuary as the whole church body, but rather just a part of it. And not doing that kind of set us up for some disillusionment. For example, if you are very in touch with the music program here, or the RE program here, or the forum, and that suddenly changes drastically, will you still find peace of mind and sanctuary here? We were convinced that we personally needed to expand our concept of sanctuary, but we weren't just quite sure how to accomplish that. So we were both relieved and excited when Janet started emphasizing covenant, especially developing something like a covenant of right relation. It seemed to provide an opportunity for us to look at our relationship to the church as a whole.
To us, it seems like creating a good covenant is a lot like deciding on how to play certain games among friends. Preparing to play a game might start with months of training, as for a marathon, or just a casual invitation to play cards. Just so, our activities at church might be well-planned or impulsive. In each case, though, a lot about what happens and how we experience it depends on the rules of the game we play. The rules might all be agreed and well-known ahead of time, as with the marathon. Or they might be last minute, the way kids often make up new rules for each backyard game. More likely, there are some of each, standard rules and house rules. Standard rules to tell us things like which of the hundreds of card games we're playing with that same old deck of 54 cards. And house rules to fit the game to the players or to the circumstances. Maybe we have younger or inexperienced players that need a break or less than the usual amount of time to play. Or maybe we just think our rules will be more fun, just as we might spice up an old recipe. If we don't agree on some rules, though, can we even play a game together? Or are we just in the same place at the same time? So think of that tense feeling we all know from childhood when a player tries to change the rules in the middle of a game to his or her favor.
Our family has enjoyed playing games together for a long time. In BK times, before kids, we had a lot of fun playing the video game Myst with our friends Michael and Karen. Shout out to Michael and Karen and Rod and Carol. We also had, Dale and I had way too much fun with a free Boggle CD that came on a box of Cheerios, geeks that we are. The girls started out on these cooperative games where nobody ever really loses. Harvest time, let's all bring in our crops together. But there's one thing that we always do, and that's set up some house rules. Do-overs might be allowed. You can start your turn before amassing 30 points, right, Audrey? Sometimes there are very strict time limits on how much a player can have. Or you can have all the time you want.
Amazingly, as you heard from the reading, you don't need to know the goal to start playing the card game Flux. The goal comes in somewhere along the way and often changes. What makes it playable is that people sit down together and agree on a single rule, just to start with. People walked in the door of this church. It's reasonable for a person to first experience this sanctuary and our services when they start coming here. But it is a church. We are the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, so we don't think of this place as a lecture hall. It is a sacred space for inspiration, for meditation, for transformation. And much of that transformation happens in the relationships between each other as people sitting here together sharing life.
I don't think I was really looking for spiritual growth when I started coming here. I was just looking for a group of people who shared my beliefs so I could feel good and comfortable about having those beliefs. I was tired of being an outsider at 6'2" tall, a lifelong vegetarian, a liberal in Texas. I know what it's like to be in the minority. Being different was something that I had turned into a strength long ago and had kind of made into a defense mechanism. It served me quite well for a really long time, but ultimately it was an easy out. It was not an opportunity for change. My spiritual journey now is to be the best person I can be while contributing to something larger than myself. Something that is meaningful, uplifting, and a catalyst for good. So I make a commitment to this community. But to adhere to a commitment you have with other people is hard work. It's not easy, but I think it's from that hard work that you get the growth.
To my mind, the most important rules for a covenant of right relation are the most minimal. What standard of behavior can I, on my worst day, still commit to uphold? If some morning I didn't have time for breakfast, I just found out a loved one was ill, my shoes don't fit right, my car is acting up, and I'm late to church, and you stop me in the hall and to ask me about a problem with the church computer, then what behavior should I tell you to expect of me in that moment? That minimum standard of behavior says, if I don't mean even this, you're right to be concerned for me, and it's okay to be upset with me. You should expect better, and you can and should help me to do better. I may not be pleasantly receptive to your correction, may not, but the heart of the covenant is that even on those occasions where I miss the mark, I commit to stay engaged while I try to get my behavior back in line.
Okay. When you are in community with other people, when you've shared a covenant on how to behave, the hardest thing is to call somebody on it when they don't do it, when they're not honoring it. The fact that we don't have a covenant yet makes this even harder, since we don't even really know what we agree on as being as acceptable. I experienced this just recently. I had an exchange with someone here at church that made me feel uncomfortable and even a little bit threatened. This person spoke very judgingly, told me I was wrong, raised her voice, seemed really irritated and exasperated with me. I remained calm and I restated my point of view, but ultimately I did not let this person know how she was making me feel, and then I turned around and talked to somebody else about it. Fortunately, my confidant let me know gently that my silence was only letting this other person feel that the way she treated me was okay. And on top of that, I was developing a negative opinion about this person without giving her any opportunity to explain to me why she was being the way she was. So while I upheld a kind of personal commitment to be polite, I wasn't doing the harder job of standing up for that value with someone who may not share it. This is a very difficult part of living honestly with other people, of being in a community. But this experience would have been easier for me if I had known that we had both agreed to a covenant as members of this church to be caring towards one another. A covenant of right relation or some agreed upon house rules allows us to leave our suspicions at the door and have meaningful experiences in an environment that may strain or break those expectations, our expectations about things that matter to us. Having that commitment to each other about a minimum standard of my own behavior and yours even helps me tolerate situations where the commitment is breached because we have a standard to get back to that is a community standard that we can remind each other of. Bringing this out of the realm of the implicit helps expose some assumptions we have about normal or acceptable behavior. And I make the promise here and now in front of all of you that I will get up the nerve to talk to this person.
And just to give you an idea of how disciplined we were in preparing for this sermon, a very timely article came in yesterday, EU World magazine, written by a consultant with the Alvin Institute, Dan Hotchkiss. It talks about covenant, mission, and vision. When discussing who the board of a church must serve, he says they must serve, quote, the congregation's mission, the covenant the congregation has set its heart to, and the peace of the divine spirit that belongs to it. He then goes on to ask, and what is the mission? Quote, the great management consultant Peter Drucker wrote that the core product of all social sector organizations is a changed human being. A congregation's mission is its unique answer to the question, whose lives do we intend to change and in what way? Growth, expanding budgets, building programs, and such trappings of success matter only if they reflect positive transformation in the lives of the people touched by the congregation's work, unquote.
You know, what we have here is a really incredible opportunity. There are not many chances for people to come together and really determine for themselves how they want to be with one another. Like the children in Roxaboxen found, This is a freedom. But it won't happen here. We can't be healthy here unless we are willing to be vulnerable and say that we're not perfect and would like to change. So I would kind of argue that of our mission, if there are people we want to change, that can start with us. And that we would dare to think that we would know what it is we want to become, and that with each other's help and love, we can get there.
In the meantime, come play some games with us. The Open Minds Covenant Group. Yes, the Open Minds Covenant Group is hosting an all-ages games night in Housen Hall this coming Saturday at 7 p.m. Snacks and drinks and surprises, childcare if you RSVP, but there'll also be supervised games for kids 5-ish and up, because we want to build a broad covenant. But you'll have to follow the rules, and we know you will. We'll bring flux.
Yes, we have the game.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Go out into the highways and byways. Give the people something of your new vision. You may possess a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God.